Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben. And in this episode, we're welcoming Jason Vitug, wellness entrepreneur and author of the book, Happy Money, Happy Life. Welcome, Jason.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
And yeah, we are so excited to have you. Yeah, now, we met earlier this year. You mentioned before we started that it does not seem like it's been as long as it has.
Yes, it has. It's been long, but it's also short. And I remember both of you so well because you had such engaging eyes. And so people don't get to see that, right, in a podcast, right. But you have engaging eyes and great conversationalists. And so I said, I definitely wanted to follow up and have this conversation. So I'm glad we're making this work.
Yeah. And what I remember is after talking to you, we both felt so good, so relaxed, so joyful. It was like yoga for our brains.
Yes, yes.
And we just turned to each other and said, we can't wait until he comes back on the podcast.
Glad to hear that. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So let's start off. Let's start off with the basics about you, Jason. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself, just your origin story. Where are you from and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah. So this is part of my spiel is for people to understand that how I got here was lots of twists and turns, ups and downs. So it wasn't a straightforward linear path. And so I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in the third largest city. So I grew up in an urban environment and in a place where my parents were on survival mode. So they worked really hard. They worked multiple jobs just to make ends meet. And they instilled like this sense of purpose and the sense of hard work. And so I think that was integrated into the person that I became today. But as I mentioned, with all the trials and tribulations and the ups and downs, I've been able to get to where I am. So as you mentioned, I'm an author and I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a world traveler. I've been to 41 countries around the world. I've been to all 50 states in the US, and I am purposefully led. So I'm all about doing things that are purposeful. I'm all about making an impact that positively impacts people's lives. That to me is essential. And I focus primarily on financial wellness because people think that because of the work that I do, because of the financial independence that I have, is that I had a silver spoon or a golden fork that I grew up with. And that was not the case. I didn't grow up with much, as I mentioned, and I was really bad with money. And I think that had a lot to do with my parents making sure we didn't stress about their finances. Mm. So they didn't talk about money growing up. And that led to a very unhealthy relationship with finance. And that led to a lot of debt, both credit cards, auto loans, student loans, what have you. And it led me to a lot of mental and emotional lows dealing with my finances. And eventually it was understanding that I needed to take control, make some changes, especially with my relationship with money that got me from where I was to where I am today. So from being indebted and miserable and unhappy to being financially independent and being able to work on the things that matter, being able to pick and choose the people I work with, the projects I work on. And it's become my life's work to get people to understand the connection between money and all our wellness dimensions. So not just the things that we could buy, but how we can improve our mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, occupational, environmental, and professional well-being. So they're all interrelated and interconnected. And I want people to understand that it does not matter where you start, it's where you end up. And it doesn't even matter where you end up, it's where you go from there. So it's a continuous evolution.
Reminds me, when you mentioned all of the dimensions of wellness, when we first talked, I had just spoken to Kennedy from our team, who I think her degree is in, do you know this, Ben? In it's wellness training. It's
right.
Yeah. And we had just had this long conversation within 3 days of the time I met you about those dimensions of wellness and how all of those different facets affect us. That was a total sideline. It's all just coming back to me now. That's all. Right. I remember a different part of the year and I feel good about that.
I love that, because this is what I've learned. When people get introduced to the wellness dimensions, and then they're attuned to hearing it from other areas, and then there's reinforcement. I think that is really important, because we live our day-to-day lives and then we forget. So sometimes we get focused on the professional achievement. Sometimes we get focused on the financial goals, and we don't take care of our mental or emotional well-being. And then that has an effect on our physical health. And then when those things happen, then we start questioning our life choices. And then now we're laying in bed going, I feel spiritually devoid of any hope and happiness. And so I love that you made that connection. And I think that's what's important. And so that's why I was excited to come here and talk about this, because we need to continue to reinforce this message. Mm-hmm. Or for those who aren't aware of the wellness dimensions, it's an introduction. And I hope that they continue doing the work of understanding how they are interconnected, interrelated, and how when one is suffering, it has an impact on others. And when we can learn what dimension is of strength, we can then use that to strengthen the one that's weak.
Mm-hmm. I feel like what you experienced, Sue, was like, you know, when you buy the red Toyota Camry and then all of a sudden that's the only car that you see, you know, you have like the awareness for it. So you see it. So hopefully our conversation today can help more people maybe be aware of the dimensions and have their radar up to seeing them around town or further in their life. Right.
Absolutely. So I'm a big believer when it comes to money isn't the goal. Money is a tool to achieve the goals. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about financial wellness and we understand money's role, then we know the wellness dimensions. We can then use money as a tool to impact them. And so that's really it. So when they're seeing all these different aspects of their lives, they can start connecting the dots. And so whether it's the red Camry or the blue Beetle that they constantly see all over the place, I want them to see wellness everywhere and that there's an opportunity to improve their life holistically.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Well, you mentioned, you know, this sense of purpose that was instilled in you really early. We're going to get back to purpose. So spoiler alert, we got some time to ruminate on that a little bit. But before we get there, one of the themes that we talked about just a little bit that I'd like to explore a little bit more, and you've done some really nice work kind of teasing this for us already. And by the way, all unscripted, everyone. Jason brought his real authentic self there to the conversation. But what you refer to is the intersection of money and happiness. And so, you know, you kind of just talked about how money can be this tool to help affect other, you know, dimensions or other areas of your life. Can you talk a little bit more, explain more about what that means, that intersection between money and happiness?
Yeah, I think we're all familiar with the question, can money buy happiness? And when you ask people, people will say, oh yeah, money can't buy happiness. But then when you start talking about the things that people need in their life to be happy, whether it's love, relationship, housing, medicine, we can relate that to money. So money isn't happiness, but money can buy happiness because it helps us afford the things that are necessary in our lives. And so for me, I want people to understand that there is a connection and that when we become more aware of how to use money to buy the things that actually affect our well-being, we are in effect buying happiness. And so when we think about the financial resources to be able to afford a home and being the feeling of safety and security, well, that often leads to a feeling of happiness and joy. So the home itself, right, might be stressful because when we think of the mortgage, the insurance, and all these things, all the costs associated with owning a home. But when we think of the feeling of safety, security, mm-hmm. raising family, those end up in terms of joy and happiness because of the feeling, the emotion that results from that purchase. And so there is a connection. And I challenge people to stop thinking about money as a bad thing or as an evil thing or anything related to something negative, because money is a tool, and it's a tool to help us buy things in order to feel better about our situation, but not for instant gratification. I want people to do it for long-term satisfaction.
So as I have stalked you on LinkedIn, You're a great follow, and I would encourage everybody to follow Jason on LinkedIn. And you have a newsletter as well that people can be a part of. I saw, and I hope you're comfortable talking about this. One example of what you're talking about, in a post, you mentioned your recent trip to the Philippines with your mom, and how grateful you were to be able to afford that trip in a way that made her comfortable for that very long trip. Yeah. That is sort of exactly what you're talking about here, using money, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because can you expound?
Well, I'm a big believer that all the hard work that we do in order to earn money isn't to stash it away. There is a better way to do things, so it earns for us, so we're exchanging less time for money. And in my book, Happy Money, Happy Life, what I did was I shared how I made a financial decision, not a family-centered decision. And so in 2019, my mom and I decided to go to the Philippines to go visit my grandmother. And so trying to get to the Philippines during the Christmas holiday season, it's like thousands of dollars to fly from the East Coast of the US to the Philippines. And I decided I was going to be the really good personal finance writer, right? I was going to find the cheapest flight possible to be able to do this comfortably, but cheap. And instead of flying during the holidays, we opted to postpone the trip until April and surprise my grandmother for her birthday. Well, we all know what happened in 2020. We had the COVID, the lockdowns, and we were unable to get to the Philippines. And my grandmother passed away in July of 2020 on my birthday. And that to me was a mark. And so I'm again choke up on it, but it was like a reminder that when we're just purely making decisions based on money and finances, we often miss out on what we say is truly valuable for us. And that was a reminder that it's not always about the cheapest product. It's not always about the cheapest flight. It's about what's the purpose. What's the intention for it? And that was an intention I can never get back. I'm never able to hug my grandmother and was not able to say goodbye to her or see her when she was alive. And so 4 years later, I was able to take my mother to the Philippines, and I spent way more money than I've ever spent on a flight. So we flew first class, and it was thousands of dollars for this trip. But I wanted her to be comfortable. So my mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's a few years ago. I'm my parents' caregivers. I take care of them. And so being in a very long flight, looking at 21 plus hours, it's very uncomfortable, especially when there's no movement. She'll get stiff. And so I said, I'm not going to go and hold back. I'm going to go and spend the time and the money and the resources to be able to do this. And that became part of the experience. It's something that I'm fortunate that I'm able to do. But also as a reminder is that this is why I work hard. This is why we all work hard, to be able to have these experiences, to be able to share with the people that we love, and hopefully do things that matter. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I always tell this, when we're sitting in our rocking chairs staring out into the mountains, I don't know why I have this picture of myself in the mountains on the porch, but we're going to be thinking about the memories and of the people that we love and the things that we've shared together. And so I was very grateful that I was able to do that and splurge on that experience to be able to give her the comfort to travel those many hours and to be able to see her family and see my family in the Philippines.
That's really beautiful. That's actually really beautiful. It sounds like the point there is to use money as a way to express, as a way to align with your own values.
Absolutely.
Rather than everything's the cheapest that it can be, but to do the things that align with your values and your purpose.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah. I think, as you said, I'm very excited when it comes to when we're talking about purpose and values, because essentially what we need to do is really understand our personal values. We need to understand what truly matters to us, and then align our time, our energy, our resources, our financial resources into those things. And so many times when I go and I talk to financial advisors, when you sit down with the financial advisors, their first question is often, oh, what goals do you want to achieve? Oh, you want to buy a house? You want to send your kids to college? I was like, well, take a step back. What are your values? What's important to you? And those values is maybe a sense of adventure. It could be a sense of safety, security, travel. And let's really go back to those things. And then from that point on, we can then identify the goals that truly matter. Mm-hmm. And so when people have a difficulty, and I see this a lot, people will tell me, oh, I set these resolutions, I set these goals, and it's hard for me to achieve them. I go, well, how do these goals relate with your value? And that's the reason, because when we're talking about achieving very difficult things, we need something internal. We need that inspiration and that motivation. And when it's aligned with the things that matter most to us, when it's hard to get out of bed, we're going to be inspired to get out of bed and do the hard work in order to achieve those goals.
Yeah. There's this direct correlation with what you're saying, to like something that I think is just so important for marketers to like understand, appreciate, have like a really like authentic connection with their values, their company's values, you know, their credit union's values, why they do what they do, because it's very, very easy. And I'm sure I speak on behalf of Sue and probably anybody that's done marketing ever. It's really easy to fall into the trap of the cheap thing, you know, or being the cheapest, or, you know, having the most attractive rate, or, you know, whatever. Mm. And to forget about like what that product or service or widget, you know, whatever it is that you're marketing or selling, what it does to like change people's lives and impact communities and all of these really, really important, valuable, purposeful things that, you know, unfortunately can just get covered up or glossed over by the price or the rate or, you know, the thing that seems to be the selling point all the time. And really the selling point can be, should be, is more easy to sell and communicate is the value that it brings to people's lives, the change that it brings to communities, whatever it might be.
That's absolutely right. And when it comes to marketers who focus on price, who focus on rate to compete, I mean, that will drive you to the ground. Because I worked in the credit union industry. I was a marketer myself. I was VP of marketing and business development. And so when we're competing with rates, well, we're competing with a lot of institutions with a lot more money that can drive the rates much lower. And what happens, it's not good for the health of the organization. And so we need to be able to differentiate ourselves. And what I find within the marketplace is that we don't talk enough about value and we don't instill those values. And so there's a different way of communicating those values along with the awesome low auto loan rates and things like that. So I'm a big believer in not trying to sell people on the dream of home ownership, but help them understand what they're trying to accomplish with that home. And so it's a different type of conversation. So what happens is that you're no longer competing with rates, you're competing really with how better can you communicate the value proposition of the credit union? And for me, certainly, is I no longer look at what's the cheapest product. I look at what does this product offer in terms of convenience, in terms of accessibility. Because I can tell you, I'm willing to pay a bit more if I could speak with a human being. And if I don't have to speak to a human being, I love speaking with chats and getting everything done through like chat messaging. And as they've gotten worse, it's like, yes, I'm willing to pay a few dollars a month more so I can speak with a live human person because I know that they're going to be able to understand my whatever situation I'm going through and be able to fix it and resolve it. And I want marketers to understand that yes, you could certainly compete with price and rates, but go beyond that. Look at the values that you're trying to instill and understand the reasoning behind why people want a new car, why people want a home or refinance or that personal loan or want to save money. Understanding those key pieces is that you're going to be able to have a better way of communicating and reaching them. And those things last. People are going to forget the rate, right? But they're never going to forget. They'll always remember how you made them feel. So if you can help them with that feeling, that emotion of joy and happiness, that's going to resonate much more. And you're going to see people saying, yeah, I understand they might be a quarter or 50 basis points more, but I like working with them and I'm going to stick with them.
Mm-hmm. I think that something that is too often forgotten and maybe simultaneously is almost cliche, but I don't know, it's cliche for a reason, so I'm just going to say it. You know, we think about these things like auto loans and student loans and mortgages and stuff, and I think it's really easy to forget like the life moment that's happening when those products are necessary. And like to your point of like how people will remember how you made them feel or how you were there for them in one of those huge moments in life. And, you know, a car is just a car. A car loan is just a car, but it might be the thing that gets you to your child's wedding or gets your kids safely to college. You know, like that's the stuff that means way more than what's after the decimal point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what I love to challenge credit unions to think about widely is about trying to reach people in their life milestone. And so there's a lot of talk in the industry about generations, right? And I've been in this. So I'm an older millennial. So I've heard the same things about millennials as they're talking about Gen Zers. And they talk about it's all the same thing. And I swore, I wrote to some journalists and I go, are you just repurposing content and changing millennial to Gen Z? Because it's exact same thing. Because I remember in the industry, they're talking about how millennials weren't buying homes, weren't buying cars. And so that was going to be the end of home ownership and car ownership. And all of a sudden, millennials, a little later on in life, started buying homes, started buying cars, and we're in the situation that we're in now. And one of the key things that I want people to understand, especially within this world and this industry, is that we should have less reliance on this generational aspect of marketing and start really focusing on the life milestone aspect of it. And mm-hmm. because that life milestones happens in different ages for people. So yes, a little older for millennials and home ownerships and car ownerships might be a little earlier for Gen Zers, but it's understanding those pieces. And when you do, when you're marketing based on values, based on milestones, you're gonna stop trying to compete with the rates, with mm-hmm. with the price, and even trying to catch up with the headlines. You're gonna do a better job in reaching the people that you need to reach when they need you. And that's ultimately it. And when you focus on wellness and happiness and joy as the center of your message, well, guess what? People are gonna remember that. And they're gonna say, every time I call the credit union, every time I call the branch, I feel happy, I feel good. So I'm gonna go to them whenever I need X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, something that I believe at my core is that if we could eliminate this idea of focusing on what is this generation doing and think from that human aspect and say, well, you know, everybody who is that age, there's an age that you go through some things and maybe that can shift depending on your personal life experiences. But when you're young, you know, a lot of us feel the same way about a lot of things. We experience things in a really similar way. And it's about the life experiences maybe at that time we haven't had. So, you know, people, I'm a huge believer that everyone, that we are more similar than we are dissimilar.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And if we focus on this idea that the experience I had as a Gen X person when I was your age as a millennial, you know, we were the same age, you know, I was the age you are and went through things at experiencing them as a person your age. It went sideways on me. I think you understand.
I totally understand. Well, that's why I think when we focus so much on just limiting our conversation and our marketing on generations, we miss out on people that are experiencing life maybe 5 years later or earlier mm-hmm. than what the general consensus is when it comes to generations. And so I'm a true believer when we focus on life milestones and experiences and things like that, it's a much better conversation to have. And so imagine having marketing based on joy, based on happiness, based on wellness, based on experiences, the different type of marketing messages that's going to go out there. And it's going to reach the people who are Gen Xers, who are millennials, who are Gen Zers, or what have you. It's going to reach them when they need And so what tends to happen, and in the space that I'm in when it comes to financial wellness, is that there's all this money and funds focused on financial education and getting people to become educated. And then most people go on to Google to search for the financial solution for their issue. And there's a good chance that credit unions and smaller financial institutions don't rise up to the top, and they end up just with like a bigger organization, and not rightfully the great one or the best one for them. And so, but when we focus on that sense of the feeling, the emotion, it's again brings it a much deeper tie. And when we're talking about credit unions, I mean, I think that's the beauty of it, is that high touch aspect of it. And certainly a lot have invested on the high tech. And so I want to push them a bit more forward and thinking about how we can integrate wellness, how we can integrate happiness into these different messages, so we can communicate to a much broader audience and stop competing based on rates.
We're right there with you, man.
Yep.
So right there with you. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that.
A proponent of the vibe-based marketing.
Oh, I love that. That's the first time I've heard that. So vibe-based
marketing. Yeah, we gotta trademark that.
Yeah, you gotta trademark that. Yeah, this is a vibe marketing.
Mail that to me, Ben. Come on. We gotta get that.
And so it's one of the key things. And so just going back to happiness and joy as being the vibe, it's something that we exude. And certainly I think that goes into the culture of the organization. And when I spoke, and that was the keynote over at the Wisconsin Credit Union League convention, I really talk about challenging credit unions to not just think of themselves as financial institutions, but as financial wellness organizations. And when you start thinking of yourself as a financial wellness organization, the way you interact, the products and services that you create and you promote start changing and start morphing. And that is certainly the trend that is happening. And the fact that I truly believe this, and having worked with a lot of fintechs and big banks, is that when you get that high touch aspect of it, and now you're integrating the high tech, and it's right for success. It's right for growth. And so again, getting people to understand financial wellness isn't something that you do. It's something that you become, and it's something that organizations need to do consistently and also promote from within.
Awesome. Are you ready for a hard left turn, Jason?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Thing.
Here we go. Hard left turn. This year, we are thinking an awful lot about purpose. I don't know if we got a chance to mention this to you, but we might have, because we have told everyone we talked to. We're working on writing a book about purpose in marketing.
Yes.
And we have been asking everybody that we interview about purpose, and specifically about their purpose, how they define their purpose as a human being here in the world. So what would you say is your life's purpose?
Okay. So I want to explain this in a little bit more, more context. So how I've come up with the definition for purpose for me is this. I've learned in life, it's all about experiences, and experiences exposes us to things that we might be interested in. So I don't know what I'm interested in unless I'm exposed to it. And it's usually through experiences. And what I've learned is that when I devote time, energy, and resources to something I'm interested in, it becomes something that I'm passionate about, right? Passion is really time and energy and resources we've devoted into an interest. And when I've learned, when my passion serves someone else other than myself, it helps others, that is my purpose. And so for me, I've learned a great deal that purpose isn't innately serving myself, it's serving something greater than myself. And it certainly can be tied to something that I'm passionate and interested in. And for me, my purpose has been, and it's a constant evolution. And I think that's the beauty of serving our purpose, is that as we reach certain steps of it, it evolves and changes. And my purpose has always been to open people's minds, open their hearts and their spirits to the possibility of their life. And certainly for me, it was financial challenges that I focused on because that held me back and certainly holds other people back. And my purpose has been to let people let go of the shame, the guilt, the embarrassment when it comes to their personal finances in order to become the better versions of themselves that they can be. And that goes along with the work that I do, whether it's speaking, writing, and things like that. And so for me, it really is challenging the status quo and people's perception of who they are by being open and being more vulnerable about my situations and the things that I've gone through with money and other things in order to help those in need.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. It sounds like you've maybe said that once before.
A little bit rehearsed.
No, but I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less for someone who's sharing your message and, creating these connections for people between things like money and happiness and purpose and physical health, mental health, all of those things, right? So one thing that you said in particular that, it's funny, it almost like catches me off guard every time we ask this question of someone, and I get this little, I maybe even had a visible smirk as you were talking. I feel like people that have spent the time to consider it and do work that is deeply rooted in their purpose, and it's almost like you're wearing it on your sleeve, they've said that it's this evolutionary thing. It's this thing that's constantly changing and stuff. And before we started, working on this book project and, really like deep diving into purpose and asking ourselves some just difficult questions about our own purpose and things like that, I hadn't really put much time or thought into the idea that, a purpose is something that that evolves or that is evolutionary or that changes much. I mean, I think if you would have asked me at the beginning of this process, I would have probably had like a general vague, like, yeah, I suppose purpose can change or whatever. But like now, after doing some research, having more and more conversations and, even seeing some data that backs up, things like brain science and stuff that shows how people change over time, like I think it's one of the coolest aspects of the research that we've done and what we've been hearing from people, because, well, one, I think it shows, kind of human aspect of the whole thing, that like humans change, we grow, we evolve over the course of our lives, and I think the best part about it is that it gives folks hope. If you're in a spot in your life where, things are feeling messy or whatever, you're in a ton of debt or whatever, like I've been there in a similar spot in my life too, where it's almost difficult to look ahead and think like, what am I even doing here? You know what I mean? And so to understand like, well, let's look at like what's in front of us or, what's in the near term, and let's talk about our purpose for that. And I'll take comfort in knowing that a year, two, 10 from now, it's probably going to be something different, and that's perfectly okay. And in fact, that's the way it always works.
That's absolutely right. And I think when we think about purpose and we talk about purpose, it's always this big grandiose thing that's going to happen later in life. And certainly as you've mentioned and articulated really well, is that purpose does change and it evolves as we change through experiences and we change through the process of serving our purpose. And so for me, what I'd like people to understand when it comes to purpose is that when purpose is serving others, so it's serving someone other than yourself, and that can come in many forms. And so that can come in the form of this podcast, when you're introducing people to experts and professionals and having these conversations, that is serving your purpose of potentially opening the minds up of people and helping them. The book is a different type of serving that purpose. Going out into conferences is a different type of serving that purpose. And so most of the time I want people to understand it's not like this big grandiose thing of going, okay, like I have this really big purpose. And interestingly enough, I've learned this when I thought I had this specific purpose in life. And that was like, I was going to be this big money guru, right? So I had this goal like 10 years ago that when I got back, I was be the money guru for everyone, because I had it all figured out. I was still messy, but I was going to talk with a bit more compassion and empathy when it comes to finances. And it hasn't really certainly worked out that way. I ended up finding my niche in financial wellness, and that has bettered the way I'm serving the purpose of helping others. So I'm not limited in the financial scope. Mm-hmm. I'm able to talk to them about the mental, the emotional, the professional, the spiritual aspect of it. And that, to me, understand that there is that evolution. And certainly when we don't say my purpose is to do something very specific, your purpose is to serve others than yourself. And that can come in many forms. And you can certainly serve people in many different ways. And you can create things, whether it's podcasts, books, YouTube videos, and that is also continuously serving your purpose. And so what tends to happen is that when we sit in the sidelines and not go through the process is where we have that moment where we're laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, going, what is my life all about? And I certainly believe everyone has gone through that at least once, maybe multiple times, because I certainly have. And that's when I have lost my way in terms of being burdened that I needed to do something great, as opposed to just realizing that I am in many ways, in small ways, serving those other than myself.
Which is great, you know, yeah. Really.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, Jason, before we get into wrap up, how can people learn more about you? What do you want us to connect them to?
Yeah.
What's the best way to find you?
The best way to get to know who I am and what I'm all about is to read my financial wellness trilogy. And that is my first book, You Only Live Once. As you can tell from that title, it's about time being the most valuable resource that we have. Happy Money, Happy Life, which is the wellness dimensions, understanding how money interacts and impacts those dimensions. And also Make Your Money Smile, which is the nuts and bolts when it comes to personal finance and helping people to achieve a level of financial independence in the simplest way possible. And it's the most tactical book. So those are probably the best ways to get to know a bit of my story and my resources and tools that I've used. I encourage people to connect with me on Instagram and YouTube as well. But I do have a word of caution. If you don't love travel, yoga, and breath work, that may not be for you. But mm-hmm. I do try to integrate those things. And so you'll notice that I am the most disciplined person when it comes to social media. I don't share just to share. I share with purpose and intention. And so I may post something today and not post for 2 weeks. And so it's bad as a quote unquote social media influencer, but it's helped me with my mental and emotional well-being. And also as a reminder to others that we don't live our life through social media. We live our life in the moment that we're in. And this most of the time is off screen. So you can certainly follow me in those channels, read the books, go through my blogs and things like that. Connect with me on LinkedIn if you're within the industry. Yeah.
Awesome. Lots of great ways to connect with you there. So it is time to wrap up and we're going to transition to our Something Awesome segment. So if you're not aware, Jason, you've got a little bit of time to prepare, but this is where we share recommendations for cool experiences we've had, good content we've consumed lately, cool things we've done, seen, heard, really anything is on the table. And my guess is you won't have trouble coming up with something if you don't have something ready. But I'll kick us off and then Jason, you'll be on deck and Sue will wrap it up for us. So I am going to share maybe a twofer. So I had a really cool experience with my wife a couple of weeks ago. We went to a Kings of Leon concert at Northerly Island in Chicago, which was awesome. It was a great concert. Those guys rock and they rock hard. Holy cow. They've been one of our favorite bands for a long time, but really good live and we had a great experience. And so Chicago's like 4.5-ish hours from home for us. So we knew we had a lot of time in the car. So we were like, hey, let's find a good podcast. Let's just binge that sucker. So luckily we found this podcast called Hysterical, which I think is on like the top charts right now. But it's about this really small community that all of a sudden people started coming down with this weird syndrome or illness where it was kind of like Tourette's, but not Tourette's. People were developing like these tics and these little outbursts. It was mostly happening within this one high school, mostly or almost all with females of a certain age. So just lots of these interesting aspects to this thing that nobody could understand why it was happening. And they did all the environmental tests, testing the water and the ground and all that stuff. I won't spoil anything, but I'll just say it was a trip in the science world, the medical world, the socioeconomical world, to understand like this part of the country and maybe some things that were influencing this behavior and this thing that was happening in the town. I'm really trying to not spoil it, so I'm using very vague language here, but I think it was like 8 episodes. They're all relatively short. So we got through it in the time driving, and it was just super good, really interesting. Kind of like a cool trip, both like from the story aspect of it and everything that happened, but then also a lot of learning around along the way with, like I say, the medical community and a lot of experts that were brought in to try and figure out what was happening here. So, and a pretty cool ending. So hysterical. Check it out.
Definitely gotta check that out. It sounds really good and fascinating. Yeah. So I was like, keep going. And then when you mentioned, you're just like, okay, I don't want to spoil it. I'm like, yep, there you go. You've piqued my interest. I'm gonna go and listen to that. So for me, what I'd like to share, and I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it's about the Sacramento History Museum. And they are one of the smallest museums. So it's in California, smallest museums in the world, but has the largest social media following. They have like close to 4 million followers on YouTube. They have almost 3 million on TikTok. And so they started back in 2020, and I was introduced to them by my cousins out in Sacramento, and they shared, "Have I heard of this?" And apparently I did not, but there were millions of people and I'd seen their videos go through the feeds, and they've just figured out a way to connect with people on social media and grow in such phenomenal ways. And a lot of that has to do with the two individuals that are on screen, Howard and Jared. So it's like a grandfather and son, and they're out there doing printing, and it's kind of feels like ASMR. So they're talking about the history of Sacramento, they're talking about different aspects, and it gets to a point where it's not about the flashiness, it's not about the speed of which the content is being shared. It's not about the cuts. It's not about the music. It really is just about that moment, that 30 seconds, the 60 seconds, that 90 seconds of just being there, listening to this man in his 80s talking. And I'm not alone. There are so many more Gen Zers that are listening to this. And I totally get it. And I understand why this one of the smallest museums in the country and in the world has the largest following, more so than the Museum of Modern Art, more so than the Louvre Museum. And it's just really phenomenal in terms of how they connected. And I just find it really interesting on how it's about authenticity. When we can be authentic and share what we're passionate about and do it in the way that we want to, it's not about like what the algorithm says that we need to do. People do resonate with it. And eventually what happened is that others share it with others. And you don't need to get the algorithms to discover it. It was all about people sharing the things that brought a bit of joy and happiness into their life. So I would love for people to check it out, because it is really interesting and fascinating, and it's really good. It's a really good downtime just listening to this man talk for 30, 60 seconds.
We will definitely share that out as well. I can't wait to check both of those things out now. Now I know I'm going to do with the rest of my day, you guys.
Yeah, right.
So because I am specializing in hard left turns today, my recommendation today is a television show on Apple TV. It is Time Bandits. And I am a fan. I am one of those fan types that I just like, if you can give me a property, you can remake a property that I like, just do it. And I'm not going to get into the semantics of it. I'm not going to be that like hater because you didn't redo it the way that I specifically remember it. It is a television show based on a movie, which I think is based on a book.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And it's a show that my husband and I have been watching together. It's really funny. It's really enjoyable. It is, you don't need to think too hard. It is a good, relaxing show to watch. So Time Bandits, Apple TV, watch it. And you know what? Don't go into the comments, because you don't need to know what other people think about it.
So I do want to add, I love Time Bandits. I saw it and I binged it and never heard of it before. So I didn't know if that was a movie or a book. And I just love things like that, that are kind of silly, it's kind of goofy. And it brings a bit of joy and happiness. And and I would second that. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. See, there's two of us. Two of us believe it's just one.
I'm sold.
All right. Check it out. Well, thank you so much, Jason, for being with us today. It's felt like another, you know, mental yoga for us, feeling good, relaxed, unstressed.
There you go.
And thank you, listeners, for always joining us. You can always catch us on your favorite podcast app, or you can find all of our episodes and listen to, you could actually catch Jason's other interview when we have in the big edit of all the interviews we did at the Wisconsin Credit Union League convention, or any one of our other guests. They're all quite wonderful. And you can catch them at our blog, exclamationcuso.com/blog.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks again, Jason. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome and see you next time.
The Osmology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.